Thanks very much, Cathy. I'm really honoured to be here, to be the opening speaker of the festival, and also as my first sort of official action as a visiting professor at Ulster University, which was an appointment that was cooked up slightly between myself and Cathy and Gillian Robinson in McGee College. One of the conditions of the visiting professorship is that I should come and speak once a year. Nothing gives me greater pleasure than talking about elections. Yeah, not many things give me greater pleasure than talking about elections, so here we are. So tremendously grateful, as I said, to Ulster University and to the Imagine Festival. I just want to single out two people of you lot who I think deserve particular recognition. The first is Alan, as in Alan in Belfast, who is hiding in the corner over there and wincing. He will be live tweeting everything that I say and everything that you say, so just be careful of Alan. In the opposite corner, I want to salute my great aunt Joan, who was born before women had the vote and has kindly come here to hear me talk about things that she has known about for a lot longer than I have been on this planet. So thank you very much for coming, being part of a strong North Down contingent here, if I can say. I thought I'm breaking this down into several slightly disparate topics, and I hope I've got my timings about right. I thought, first of all, we should think about what an election actually is in this country and in other countries. These are all descriptions I've heard used. A mini-referendum on the border, a sectarian headcount, a reaffirmation of communal identity, a complex exercise of coalition building, a complete waste of time. Or I subscribe to the great fun thesis myself. We can discuss this later, and I have a provocative question for you at the end about this. Maybe after you've heard what I have to say, you may have some views.
Could you speak up just a little? There's a bit of noise from the...
I will do my best. I shall declaim. Yeah. Elections here tend to be, and indeed we tend to analyse society generally in terms of the Great Divide. These two horrible acronyms are being increasingly used, including by people who I used to respect. PUL and CNR, standing for Protestant versus Catholic, Unionist versus Nationalist, Loyalist versus Republican. I oppose this binary distinction. I find that it's not actually very helpful in understanding the way that Northern Irish society is constructed and actually works. And I thought I'm going to throw an awful lot of numbers at you. I'm sorry about this, but it's what I do. I thought it might be useful to look at the numbers that are actually in the last two decennial censuses. In 2001, 45.6% of us were Protestants and other Christians. 10 years later, that had gone down by four. Again, for Roman Catholics, it went up slightly from 40.2 in 2001 to 40.8 in 2011. But that doesn't account for everybody by any means. There are plenty of non-Christians around. I mean, not plenty, but at least 14,000 of people who claim to be practicing a religion other than Christianity. But the real growth in the last 10 years has been of those who claim to have no religion or would not state it. And that went up from nearly 14% to nearly 17%. And it seems to me that the growth area in Northern Irish society is perhaps in the fuzziness in the middle. I thought we should look at the numbers from the most recent elections as well. I'm going to be concentrating on the Westminster elections today because they are happening in less than 2 months. Almost exactly 2 months, but slightly less. 2 months less, 2 days. At the last Westminster election, as you'll recall, the Unionist parties collectively got just over half the votes. The Nationalist parties got 42%. Others got the remainder. Turnout, 57.6%. At the last Assembly election, a year later, similar but distinctly lower for the Unionists, almost exactly the same for the Nationalists. Others, obviously, if one is down, then the others go up. And you have a fairly consistent picture there. Last year's elections threw up an interesting facet. You'll notice that in both of the elections from 4 or 5 years ago, the Unionist vote was down a wee bit, Nationalist vote much the same, other vote up. Last year, we had an interesting twist in the electoral cycle. In the local government elections, Unionists were up 2%, Nationalists down 2%. Others about the same. In the European Parliament election held on the same day, very similar picture. Unionists up a bit, Nationalists down a bit more. Others also, obviously, up in terms of swings and roundabouts. So, if we're looking at the overall picture from the census, we see that the population who describe themselves as Catholics stays much the same. Those who call themselves Protestants, slightly fewer. Those who say they're none or not stated, growing. And if you look at the election picture, you see a slightly different phenomenon. Unionist vote steady around 50%, nationalist vote steady around 40%. Visible swing to the unionists in 2014, taking the electoral cycle. Turnout has stabilised in the sort of mid-50s. And that's what we see politically in Northern Ireland. This little graphic I stole from Newton Emerson of the Portadown News. He used to do... he had one particular blog entry back in November 2002, which mocked me in my website in a beautiful way, but I will not represent it for you. You can go and hunt it down. The census this year, or I should say in 2011, it didn't just ask about religious identity, it asked about national identity. And the results here were very interesting indeed, and I'm afraid I'm going to spend a fair amount of time just describing them to you. It offered people the option of ticking the box to say that they were British, and you see nearly 40% did so, or that they were Irish, just over a quarter did so, or that they were Northern Irish, and just over 20% chose that option. But it also offered the sort of smorgasbord of combining the various options so that you could choose to be one, two, or all three. And then, of course, there were 5% of people who decided they wouldn't belong to any of those particular traditions. I'll be looking at that 5% a bit more. This table looks bad, but it also combines the English, Scots, and Welsh into the others. And there's a whole lot of extra figures on that one as well, if you want to look them up. But the headline is, if you add together all of those who claim to be British, it's a smidgen over 48%, just under half. All of those who say that they are Irish, 28.35%. All of those who say that they're Northern Irish, 29.5%. And that's those numbers obviously add up to a bit more than 100% because it includes the people who gave more than one of the answers. What does this actually mean? I mean, the concept of Britishness and Irishness are both pretty heavily contested. And now we've injected Northern Irish as a concept as well. So just to flash back to the numbers and the blurry divide, you'll see that the sort of unionist vote and British identity run rather ahead of people who claim to be Protestants by religion, whereas Irish identity runs rather behind both those who are voting nationalist and those who say that they are Catholics. Which to me points to a necessity to consider that we are a complex population of 1.7 million. Everyone has their own path to their own identity, which they will follow in their own way. Having said that, we can interrogate who actually does think that they are British, who thinks they're Irish, who thinks they're Northern Irish. And for this, I've taken... The census gives you lots of data, if you really want to use it. And I've chosen to go drill down to two levels. The ward level, which is the 580 wards that were set up in 1991 for the local council elections of 93 and have now been scrapped, unfortunately, but they still give you an element of granularity which is useful. And I'm also looking at the parliamentary election constituencies because that's what the next election we have is. So the five places in Northern Ireland that are most likely to think of themselves as British are, and you will not be terribly surprised, Ahochel at 84%, followed by three other Ballymena wards, including Cullibacky and Kells, and Dunanny, which, for those of you who are not into these things, that is up at Rathcoole. So none of this, I think, is terribly surprising, that people living in those parts of the world would identify themselves as British to a much larger extent. But along with this, I've also included those who consider themselves Irish, those who consider themselves Northern Irish, and you'll see that that's a fairly large chunk. It's in the mid-20s. And I've also compared with religious identity, which again doesn't tell you anything terribly surprising. All of these places are more than 85% Protestant, which is on the high side by Northern Irish standards. If you take it to parliamentary constituencies, again, no huge surprise. We have a strong North Down contingent here today. They won't be very shocked by this. What is interesting is that when you take it up to the bigger level, and these are all areas that would have a relatively strong unionist vote, with certain exceptions, What I find interesting is that at the constituency level, there's quite a strong Northern Irish identity from these places as well. So these are areas which see no contradiction and, if anything, a sort of multiplication effect. And I'm going to drill down a bit more into that later. Who thinks they're Irish? The five most Irish wards. I won't make you guess. I mean, again, no huge surprise. Four of them on the city side in Derry and the other one in South Armagh, where you get the top identification as Irish. I have to say this does worry me a little bit for one reason, which is that the reported number of people calling themselves Irish is actually a bit lower than you would expect, given that all of these places are around 95% Catholic. Not only that, but if you look at the percentage of people who claim that they're British, I think there may be a certain number of people ticking the British box for a quieter life on the basis that this was who knows who's going to be looking at the census figures and what those data may be used for. So I come into this with a slight query about whether at the lower end, whether the British figures can be completely relied on. I find myself asking that again when you go to parliamentary constituency level, where we come across the interesting statistic that although only 16, one in six in West Belfast are Protestant, more than one in five identify as British. Although 80% are Catholic, less than 60% identify as Irish. So this worries me a bit in terms of the robustness of the figures, and I think it probably requires a little bit of further investigation. I mean, we can easily see what the likely story is here. The Northern Irish question. Now, who does think that they're Northern Irish? You may be a little surprised. If you go down to ward level, it's actually heavily nationalist areas, or heavily Catholic areas, which are voting for nationalist parties, I should say. But they're sort of, on the whole, fairly not particularly hard line, with perhaps the exception of Ardbo. But you know, this is a sort of softer identity, where perhaps people are choosing Northern Irish as a dimension of Irishness, and perhaps can't be bothered to tick the Irish box. Having ticked the Northern Irish box, they feel that sort of covers them. One can only speculate. Again, I comment that the figures for British seem to me, frankly, unreasonably high. If you go to the most Northern Irish constituencies, you get quite a fascinating result. The four most Northern Irish constituencies are North Down, strongly Unionist; South Down, strongly Nationalist; West Tyrone, strongly Nationalist; Strangford, strongly Unionist. Who would have predicted that? And all four of them really within a percentage point of the number of people who identified as Northern Irish, possibly for completely different reasons, but they've ticked that's the box that they have ticked. Let's drill into this a bit further. I mean, the Northern Irish top figure by ward is the 42% from Ballyhoe and Corky up in Ballymoney. Who doesn't think they're Northern Irish? Where are the lowest percentages of people claiming that identity? The five least Northern Irish wards are... Now, who would have thought that? Four strongly nationalist wards, of course, but then the Shankill comes out on top. The Shankill, of course, for rather a different reason. But in the Shankill, you have an 80% identification with Britishness, 85% Protestants, whereas if you add together all the others, I don't think you get much over 10. So you see that this is a concept that is appealing and also not appealing for rather different reasons, or certainly in very different places. Again, if I go by constituencies, there's one fairly clear picture, which is that urban nationalist areas are not particularly keen on being described as Northern Irish and prefer to go for Irish. But I have to say, I find the Newry and Armagh and North Belfast figures pretty close to the ones we had for North Down and South Down. In fact, for me, the story out of this is that the Northern Irish totals in each constituency, apart from the last two, are really within spitting distance of each other. And given the methodology of the census, I have to say basically 30% of people across Northern Ireland from various backgrounds, except in Derry and West Belfast, would identify themselves as quite happily as Northern Irish rather than as British or Irish. The census does, in fact, break this down by religion, which tells me more or less what I thought, that the Northern Irish identity, 27% Protestants think themselves in that way, 31% of Catholics think of themselves in that way. That is essentially the same number. Slightly more for those who see themselves as not religious at all, which again is interesting. Rather fewer for the others column. In fact, the others column looks rather interesting, doesn't it? Not very surprisingly, those who are not from a Christian background are overrepresented among those who are not British or Irish or Northern Irish or English, Scottish or Welsh. Let's have a look at the others. The five places where you're least likely to find somebody who is British or Irish or Northern Irish, again going with the same methodology. What's up in Dungannon? There are four Dungannon wards where the number of people who think of themselves as not British or Irish is around a quarter to a third, which is huge. And if we try and look at the religious statistics, that slightly gives us the feeling that these people may be Catholics or they may be Protestants, but they're definitely Christians, but there's not a very, or at least most of them, although there's again quite interesting input from Cool Hill in Dungannon. But there's something interesting happening there in Dungannon. And, of course, you probably all know this, but I've been out of the country for a while.
So immigrants?
It is the immigrants. And if you look at the origins, again, from the census, you can see this. Basically, this is, the figure of those who are not British or Irish. This is the percentage who were born in these islands. Et cetera means the Isle of Man and the Channel Islands here, just to be sure. The rest of Europe, and I mean, you're quite right, of course, it's Poles, it's Lithuanians, it's people who've come in,
Portuguese,
and Portuguese, and I believe that also covers East Timor and Angola
and
Macau, indeed. And Macau perhaps overrepresented in Cool Hill with this Middle East and Asia thing, and East Timor as well. I don't know if East Timor counts as Asia, probably does. Australia, no? Okay. So we're seeing, and I just throw this up quickly, but there are too many numbers to look at properly here, but I just found it interesting that we have this increasing diversity in Northern Ireland, and in particular you have this massive number of other European countries coming into Fermanagh and South Tyrone, and no big surprise that in South Belfast there's a massive number of people from the Middle East and Asia, which I think in this case probably means the Indian subcontinent and China. This has got serious electoral prospects. I mean, we've seen already that South Belfast is able to elect a Chinese woman to the Northern Ireland Assembly. Fermanagh and South Tyrone had the closest election result in the United Kingdom at the last Westminster election. Who is reaching out to these Eastern European immigrants, who some of whom will have been staying long enough to get votes, all of whom will have votes in local council elections? Who is doing that outreach? I don't know. So the changing picture is, the electorate is becoming more diverse. Fewer people identify with those old labels, although it's still true, perhaps to a first approximation, and it's perhaps stronger for the British Protestant identity than the Catholic Irish identity. The Northern Irish identity is growing, but I couldn't say that it's yet reached a critical mass. Sorry, just to go back, to linger on that for a moment. I'm going to shift focus to the immediate future now and talk about the coming Westminster elections. I threw up this graph. Basically, we've had the same five parties winning most of the votes at Westminster elections since 1983. The first election I voted in was in 1987, just for reference. I lived in Cambridge and I voted for Shirley Williams. Not that it did her very much good, but there we are. And you'll see that the story of the political party story is that the DUP have become the largest unionist party. Sinn Féin have become the largest nationalist party, having both started rather on the back foot. They have both built up and this century have overtaken the Ulster Unionists and the SDLP respectively. Meanwhile, the Alliance Party has been squeezed in the middle, and is now has more recently made a recovery back to previous levels of strength. If you look at the unionist versus nationalist balance, what really strikes me is that it has stayed much the same, particularly for all the elections this century. And this was clear from my very first slide. You've had actually a slight decline in the nationalist vote, but I mean, I don't take that terribly seriously. It's staying around 40%. In 2001, which was the election where David Trimble was particularly trying to eat into the middle ground for the Ulster unionist vote, that clearly did have some effect. I would see this as being more like the natural level of unionist support at a shade over 50%, but not very much over 50%. I mean, this may seem like a bit of a rhetorical question. Do Catholics vote for nationalist candidates? But I've mapped out here the census population versus the actual nationalist vote. And there are some points of variation. In West Belfast and in South Down, nationalist candidates get a lot more votes than there are Catholic voters proportionally. On the other hand, below the curve, there's a number of these constituencies, particularly where Alliance is reasonably strong, but also in other places. I sense that there may have been tactical voting going on, and I'll look at this in more detail in Upper Bound, South Central, possibly even West Tyrone. I'm not so sure about that. The parallel slide is not a mirror image of the previous one, and that's interesting in itself. Again, East Belfast, the Alliance Party did very, very well in the last election. Likewise, we see more votes for fewer votes for unionist parties than one might expect in the three SDLP-held constituencies and in West Belfast. And I'll be looking at exactly why that is. Now, do Protestants ever vote nationalist? And the answer is quite clearly yes. If you look at what's happened in South Down at the last Westminster election, and you stack up all of the nationalist votes, it goes so far over this way. And this is the census returns. Oh, sorry, 2% there. Apologies for that. Stop your work. You'll see that it's pretty much a certainty that Margaret Ritchie's election didn't depend on but benefited from the votes of people who have voted for unionist candidates in other elections. You'll see that the unionist vote is 10% lower than otherwise would have been. The SDLP vote is roughly 12% higher. I mean, one can construct other scenarios, like somehow mystically more SDLP voters appeared out of the woodwork and somehow strangely all of the unionist voters stayed home in 2010. I think it's my own view is that turnout tends to affect all parties equally, and that the most likely explanation is that quite simply some people decided to give Margaret Ritchie their vote at that election. Similarly, although not quite so clear in Foyle, where Mark Durkan, likewise, the SDLP vote goes quite a long way over here, and some of this grey vote for other candidates is actually Eamon McCann and should really sort of perhaps be inserted in this side. On the other hand, is it happening the other way around? Definitely yes. If you look at South Antrim from the last election, where Reg MP, as you may recall, was trying desperately to unseat William McCrae, and again, this is other, I think that's TUB candidate there, it's clear that the total unionist vote is so large that it must have extended at the very least into people who identify, voters who identify as Catholics, and probably the combined nationalist vote is down a hair from what it was in subsequent elections, down to 23% as compared to the 25% that came along later. Even more clearly, I think, in North Antrim, where Ian Paisley Jr. benefited from the votes of people who would otherwise vote nationalist. And I think it may seem very weird to suggest that nationalist voters would ever vote for Ian Paisley, but that's to be on the numbers, this is clearly what's happened in 2010. Faced with a potential challenge from Jim Allister of the TUV, and it wasn't the Ulster Unionists, it was the Conservatives who fought that seat in 2010, I would say that there's a 3% difference between the nationalist votes in the Assembly election and in the Westminster election, and I think those 3% voted for Ian Oak, as they call him. Volatile voters. Some seats are particularly interesting in Northern Ireland. South Belfast is one of them. And to me, this illustrates one of the rising themes of Northern Irish elections. It's about building a coalition of voters from many different backgrounds. And I think that's what the SDLP have succeeded in doing in South Belfast. The SDLP collective vote in 2010 was higher than the Unionist collective vote. And that was borne out by the census results, which put both Catholics and Protestants on about 44%, which leaves a very large number of people in the middle. You know, that's 12%. That's an assembly seat. In fact, one could even go so far as to say that that's the Alliance assembly seat. Since then, we've seen the Nationalist vote perhaps down a chunk, the Alliance vote up a chunk. It's going to be a very interesting election there this year, with all five of the major parties contesting, and all five of them likely to end up within 10% of each other's votes, and maybe a lot closer than that. It could be a genuinely five-way marginal. I will tell you later which way I would bet. North Down, by contrast, is a case of coalition building behind somebody who isn't even in the political party. As Lady Sylvia Herman got almost 2 votes in 3 running as a non-party candidate in 2010. And I'm quite happy to reveal that I think that she will win again this year. I see nods. Intervention from the North Down contingent should go in the minutes. So, okay. You'll see that the nationalist vote in North Down is practically non-existent. Catholics in North Down do not vote nationalist, and I'm pretty sure they're voting for Sylvia Herman, along with pretty much everybody else. I'm going to look at two last seats before I finish up on the turnout question, which I think is important and shouldn't be neglected. The two most marginal seats in this election, probably, or certainly the two contested seats that I'm concentrating most of my analysis on, are East and North Belfast. Is this North Belfast here, strictly speaking? Yeah, we are, just over the boundary. Okay, well, we'll do East first. As you will, I'm sure, all well remember, Alliance unexpectedly, to me at least, won the seat in 2010. Since then, the Alliance vote has not been as high as it was at that point, and one can speculate about why that was. Was there a particular problem with Peter Robinson in 2010? Well, I mean, there was. We know that for sure. Can this be repeated? I apologise that I have not been able to factor in last year's local government elections into my analysis. My reason for doing that is that because of the change of boundaries, I've not been able to work out how to allocate the votes from the local elections of last year to my own satisfaction, and I wouldn't want to inflict unsatisfactory analysis on everybody. It is true that comparing the 2011 local elections with 2014 local elections, the Alliance vote in East Belfast was down a bit. It is also true that the DUP vote was down a bit more. The vote in general was much the same. We will see how it all plays out. I think it's very difficult to call these Belfast seats. I think the more Unionist candidates there are, the better chance Naomi Long has of a very difficult defence. And I think that's as far as I would like to go. Here, as we stand in North Belfast, it's much easier to describe, but even more difficult to call. Essentially, you have the two sides of the community pretty much balanced, according to the census, 46% Protestant, 47% Catholic. And you'll see that in the last couple of elections, that has been more or less equally, you know, that's 44 to 43, that's 45 to 46, that's 48 to 46. In terms of adding together the percentages for the communities. So the winner will be whichever of Gerry Kelly and Nigel Dodds is the most successful at eating into the support of their community rivals. Not being on the ground anymore, those of you with long memories may recall that I myself fought an election in North Belfast in 1996. I should feel grateful to the 95% of the voters who did not support me on that occasion because they'd liberated me to follow a different career. Somehow I do feel more grateful to the 5% who did, but that's just life. Anyway, so North Belfast is going to be an interesting story come election night. So if we're looking at what the future of Northern Irish party politics is, one has to generalise and not be too specific. Most Protestants vote Unionists, most Catholics vote Nationalists, mostly. And the exceptions are getting less exceptional. Does that help? It's not, and I think it's wrong to talk about tactical voting. I think each election campaign becomes its own entity, and each election campaign requires its own exercise of building and rebuilding winning coalitions. And getting to my last substantial section, the biggest change in voter behaviour in Northern Ireland is that many more of them don't actually vote. And this is a real phenomenon. In 2001, in the Westminster election, the top four constituency turnouts in the UK from all 659, I think it was then, were Mid-Ulster, West Tyrone, Fermanagh South Tyrone, and Uri and Armagh. 4 years later, the top six were, again, three Northern Irish constituencies in the top six turnout constituencies in 2005. In 2010, Fermanagh South Tyrone was 179th of 650 seats, and no other Northern Ireland seat was in the top 400. Things have changed. What does this mean? Is it because of the new voting procedures, new electoral list procedures? Has politics just become less exciting? Would that be so bad? If we look at this in a European perspective, the Westminster election in 2010, Northern Ireland unusually had a lower turnout than the UK as a whole. But I thought it'd be useful to look at this in the European Union context. Three EU countries have got compulsory voting, including glorious Belgium, where I live, and I'm now a citizen, so I must go and vote every time there is an election. Last time I wasn't there and gave my wife my proxy. Of the other 25, 65%, which was the British turnout, is dead on the average of turnout in the last parliamentary elections. Seven EU countries, which is, say, a quarter of them, had the same or lower turnout than Northern Ireland in their last parliamentary election. Now, of those seven, five are, you know, transitional democracies where one can perhaps think of, theorise a certain disaffection. One is Portugal, which has its own peculiar history, as those of you who know it well will be aware. One is France, and that's rather interesting, that the last election for the French National Assembly pulled out only 57% of the vote. Now, in fairness, in the French system, that was like the third and fourth vote that they had within a couple of months, because it came immediately after the presidential system. So perhaps people were getting a bit tired. But I found that interesting. So my question on turnout figures is Northern Ireland, whisper it, becoming a normal place? What is the future then? In Belgium, we have a rigidly divided party system between Francophone parties and Flemish parties. And if you want to be in politics, you must choose whether you're Flemish or Francophone. I'm Flemish for Belgian purposes. My accent doesn't quite give that away, but there we are. But it basically means that Moroccans and Turkish and African immigrants all must become French speakers or Flemish speakers if they wish to participate in Belgian politics. And Belgian politics is, as well as being compulsory voting, it's actually quite liberal in terms of involving people, because obviously once people have to vote, then it behooves the political parties to take them seriously. Bosnia, on the other hand, has gone for a differently rigid system. Rather than just having a first minister and deputy first minister of different traditions, the Bosnians have got three presidents simultaneously, of whom the current president of the presidency is my good friend Professor Ivanic from Banja Luka, who looks like a rugby player and I think possibly has been. They must be one Serb, one Croat and one Bosniak. This arrangement has been challenged by the Council of Europe and by the European Union, who say that the highest civilian office in the land must be open to all citizens to participate. And a Jewish and a Roma Bosnian activists have taken a famous court case to try and compel the state to allow them to stand as presidential candidates, which currently they're not able to do. On the other hand, you have the Anglo-Saxon model, and I'm thinking here in terms of how politics has traditionally worked in Britain and America, where you've got catch-all political parties that pull in people from different and diverse traditions. Some people would like to see Northern Irish politics evolve in that direction. And to me, that raised the question, what is normal politics anyway? Does normal mean that you have a left-wing party and a right-wing party and a small centrist party in the middle? Or does that mean you're just confusing normal with England in the 1950s? In that if you look at other countries, you don't actually necessarily see that pattern. Traditional party systems are under pressure all over Europe. In Britain, you have the rise of UKIP and the Greens, to a lesser extent, and the Scottish Nationalists' likely domination in Scotland. In France, the Front National is now the biggest single party. In Spain, Podemos is rising, and so are the Ciudadanos. I should have put them in as well. And in Greece, we've seen a previously marginal party, Syriza, actually taking power. Northern Ireland's party system, as I showed in an earlier graph, has been stable since 1983, which, you know, a couple of years ago, that seemed like a rather short time. Now, by European standards, it's beginning to seem like rather a long time. What comes next? You decide. Thank you.